Hello and welcome to Press TV's debate. I'm Marcia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. The U.S. Vice President has visited a detention facility for migrants on the southern border. President Trump says they sent the VP there to stop the rumors of inhumane treatment, though Pence gave the thumbs up for the way migrants are being treated. Journalists were only given 90 seconds to see the migrants. And reports that the situation is terrible. In tonight's debate, we will talk about President Trump's controversial immigration policy that has drawn international condemnation. Before that, let's get an update from Press TV's Colin Campbell in Washington, D.C. Thanks so much for being with us. Colin, well, tell us about the coverage that this issue is receiving by U.S. media.
Hi, Marcia. Well, in the U.S., the immigration crisis at the border is receiving consummate coverage almost 24/7 on many of the media outlets throughout our country. This would be conceived as the top issue among many people, either watching media or among lawmakers. I'm not so sure if that's what the number one issue is with voters, however. But if you look and watch the media that is being covered throughout the week, most of that coverage is devoted to the immigration crisis. Now, depending on how you define crisis may depend on what side of the aisle you stand on. When Vice President Pence visited the centers this week, he talked about a crisis, meaning that there was an influx of migrants coming into the United States who wanted entry. However, on the other side of the aisle, as we know, Mike Pence, the vice president, is conservative. On the other side of the aisle, the liberals, with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who held a hearing and on this meeting the immigration center. When she talks about a crisis, she talks about the treatment of these undocumented migrants, which some people refer to in a legal sense as illegal aliens. When she talks about a crisis, she talks about the lack of water that people have access to, the lack of food, the lack of cleaning necessities, being able to brush their teeth, take a shower, separation from their children. Of course, one of the number one issues that she has compunctions over when she talks about that crisis. But when you talk about, when you talk to the Trump administration, Vice President Mike Pence, Customs Border Patrol and Protection Services, they talk about the crisis of the number of people trying to come into the United States. And that's where that divide is. That's where they have to have a meeting of the minds. What type of dynamic is the actual number of people trying to cross into the United States? And once we figure out what that number is, if it is actually indeed a crisis of proportions, how those people should be treated once they come into the United States. Of course, there are ports of entry. Those who are seeking asylum, the administration says, you should come through those protected areas if you want to do the procedure properly. And of course, trying to do it that way, there is it's overbooked. It's very crowded. It's hard to get into the United States through these legal ports of entry. So people are trying to circumvent them, and that's when they are looked at as criminals, and they're treated very harshly by this administration when they're looked at as quote unquote illegal aliens trying to gain illegal entry into the United States.
And many times risking their lives, and we've seen some deaths actually with that. Thanks so much for that update, Colin Campbell, our Press TV correspondent on the ground there in Washington, D.C. And now I'd like to welcome my guest to the program, the chairman of African People's Socialist Party, Omali Yeshitela out of Florida, and journalist and author Daniel Lazar out of New York. Thank you so much for being with us, both of you. Let's start this off with Daniel. Well, what is your perspective about the way migrants are currently being treated by the U.S. government?
Well, they're being treated very badly. I think Trump is doing this deliberately in order to discourage people from trying to make their way into the country. The problem is they are fleeing conditions which are largely attributable to the United States. The U.S. has intervened in Central America for decades in support of brutal right-wing dictatorships and also in pursuit of a war on drugs, which has made conditions in those societies just horrendous. It's given rise to gang warfare on a level we can barely comprehend. People are unsafe. They're fleeing for their lives. They are looking for refuge, and the U.S. on one hand makes their conditions impossible, on the other hand refuses them asylum. So it's an impossible situation that Trump's brutal policies are making worse.
Well, Amali, what has happened to that famous U.S. motto on the Statue of Liberty, give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses to breathe free the wretched refuse of your teeming shores? Sounded good, but did it ever really exist for everyone? And now it definitely seems like it does not exist. Your take.
Well, I think, first of all, in order to really have a meaningful discussion around what is characterized as the immigrant question, it's necessary to identify the United States for exactly what it is. And what it is a settler colony itself. It is a situation where Europeans fleeing horrible conditions in Europe themselves found themselves. They came to the land that's now called America. They stole this land. They took it from the indigenous people. They brought and kidnapped African people and brought Africans to work on this land for free. And what you have, the treatment of the so-called immigrants on the border, which is the false border that was created, the borders didn't exist before the Europeans got here and made that. So it's not just a Trump issue, it's a settler colony issue. And what we see in terms of the treatment and of the immigrants, you're calling them detention centers, they're concentration camps. They're the same kinds of concentration camps that are euphemistically referred to as Indian reservations in this country, the same kind, and where treatment is horrible. In any colonial situation, you find the same kind of horrible treatment that we're finding at the southern border of the United States. And then they call ghettos in this country where African people reside, horrible conditions, incredibly horrible conditions that are so ordinary that they don't even make the newspapers anymore. We're talking about a situation of concentration camps, detention centers, the U.S. prison, largest prison population in the entire planet Earth is the United States government in the United States, with half of those prisons being African people and more of them being indigenous people, etc. So what we're looking at when we look at the southern border is a consequence of an illegitimate entity coming to this land, stealing this land, and necessarily having to use brutal force and terror in order to keep this land and to discourage people from coming into a territory that might normally and ordinarily be called their own. You got to remember, here we talk about Mexico, half of Mexico was stolen at gunpoint by the United States government. And then this artificial border created, and now the people who come across the border are characterized as illegals, but the Europeans who stole the land legalized themselves. And that's what colonialism does. And so we're looking at a detention problem, an immigration problem that's been defined by the very same people who themselves came here facing horrible democratic situations.
Well, what about that, Daniel? Your take on that? Because there are many people reacting as if they're quite surprised by Washington and the way it is responding to these individuals in the border. But as our guest said in Florida, is it actually anything new? I mean, from the very beginning of the establishment of what is called the United States, excuse me, we have seen, as he said, from taking the lands of the native, taking the illegally taking the Africans to build the country, and continually excluding those who they want to exclude and including a few. Your take.
Well, I mean, that's of course true in U.S. History. The U.S. has behaved quite brutally to various subject peoples. But you must bear in mind that every nation does this. I mean, every nation is an act of theft, where a dominant people takes the land and establishes a new government over the protests of the preceding people. France suppressed minorities in the process of creating a modern French nation. The Anglo-Saxons invaded Britain in the 5th century and displaced the native Celtic Christian population. I mean, all countries do this, but the U.S., my focus is on the recent policies of the U.S. In combating communism and in drugs in Central America. And these policies have done far more harm than good. especially the drug war. The U.S. has created horrendous conditions, has created vast illegality, gangsterism. And yet the U.S. persists. There's no attempt to sort of try to figure out where these policies are going,
well,
whether
Daniel,
they're making
sorry
things
to
better
you,
or worse.
But aren't these policies,
the U.S. doesn't care. It exports
aren't these policies
violence,
inherently,
and then is very surprised.
Sorry, Daniel. Aren't these policies inherently racist to begin with? You're talking about war, whether we're talking about inside the country or outside the country, where we know African Americans were targeted, are those from Central and South America were targeted. We're talking about a situation that's based on the fact that many would say that the regime in Washington is actually based on racism. Thus, we see these policies, not just something of historical fact, but obviously quite prevalent even today.
I think that's the fundamental question. To talk about all
yes,
nations.
Yes, of course, I mean, race
true,
and drugs
nations,
are intertwined going back to the 19th century. And
go ahead, Daniel.
There's no doubt that racism is a big part of the story, and there's no doubt the U.S. feels it can do what it wants to do with regard to the populations of Central America. Different rules apply. The U.S. feels free to behave as brutally as it wishes, with horrendous human consequences, and those consequences are now battering at the door. Looking for refuge, trying to get into the United States.
Okay.
But the U.S. Just seems to be unable to even consider where these policies are
okay.
going.
Okay. Let me get Omaili back in there. Your take on that?
Go ahead. I think the U.S. is quite conscious, and it's not just Trump. I mean, Obama kicked more so-called refugees out of this country than anybody. It's been Democrats, Republicans, liberals, conservatives. The fact of the matter is, you have a settler colony. And you haven't had settler colonies throughout history. You have a settler colony like Israel, you have a settler colony like the apartheid regime in South Africa, and there's a settler colony that's set itself up inside the United States and has taken the land from the people. And we're not talking about something that happened a long time ago. People live in concentration camps in this country today. The detention centers are one of them. Even people coming across the border upset the population in such a fashion that the indigenous people stand the potential of becoming a majority, where right now white people are the majority, and there's a consciousness in this country of invasion that is perpetrated and pushed all the time by regimes such as the Trump regime, but liberals participate in this as well. And so while they are willing to talk about the immigrant question and perhaps Trump is being naughty on the one hand, but they don't say anything about the history of the United States government overturning any government that's in South America that could try to do something for the people to extract themselves from the relationship with the agricultural corporations and other entities that's run this Southern America that's been called the backyard of the United States forever. The people want to be free, and they, when they come to this country, they are chasing their own resources that have been extracted from them in South America, in Central America, and other places. And when people look at a television, look at video or something that reflects life inside the United States, they're looking at the finished products that's been stolen from them, that's made the United States wealthy at their expense. And people come and try to get here, chasing their own resources. The United States is a brutal dictatorial entity that makes itself manifest not only in the United States, but throughout South America and the world.
All right, well, Daniel, what about from the international perspective, as point legality of what is taking place? There's a certain way that refugees are supposed to be treated. How does the United States get away with basically ignoring international law?
Well, you're absolutely correct. I mean, there's a firm body of international law which says that asylum seekers must be treated humanely, must be given a fair hearing. Their applications should be carefully considered, and the U.S. is violating all these rules. So, how does it get away with it? The U.S. gets away with a lot. The U.S. is the global hegemon, the global sovereign, and so therefore it. it thinks it can make the rules as it goes along, and unfortunately, much of the world goes along with the U.S. in this. So the world seems happy to defer to the United States as the rule maker rather than the rule breaker. And so therefore, America thinks it's exempt.
Mm. Well, Omali, there are many who are surprised to hear that Border Patrol guards or Homeland Security have actually separated kids from their families. Are you surprised? I mean, if we look at the history of the United States, it seems like it's not as rare as some Americans may think.
Yeah, I think that's one of the real problems that the world is confronted with, is those people who are inside the United States who are nothing but apologists for what the United States does by equalizing the treatment that the United States gives to Africans, indigenous people, and others with some kind of historical, fanciful existence. The reality is the United States has no regard for law. It's got the guns, and that's the thing that makes the determination. And I am in America as a consequence of American policy of separating children from their families. And the fact is that historically that's been the case. They've kidnapped indigenous people. They've taken children from the indigenous families and stuck them in schools where they're going to transform them so they won't be so-called Indians anymore, to make them white and et cetera. They've done that with people throughout history, and they've done that to African people in this country. And in fact, a condition for being successful, if you're a black person in America, is to be as white-like as possible. And if you're not as white-like as possible, you're ghettoized and imprisoned and all kinds of things like that happen. That's the condition that we confronted with, and our children are constantly separated from us. In fact, America has the largest children prison population in the world. I mean, so it's nothing new what we're looking at. African children are transformed to so-called foster homes. They kidnap our children, stuff them in foster homes. In many instances, white families make a lot of money taking care of African children as foster children. So it's farce, and it's an ongoing effort all the time to disrupt families, to disrupt normal conditions of existence for people who live under colonial conditions inside this country and who are colonized by America and other places around the world. That's okay. The reality.
All right, well, Daniel, how much of what we have been witnessing from the U.S. was based on a facade that is difficult for a country which has over $21 trillion to continue, because the U.S. since the 70s have not had a gold backing for its money and has simply printed money and made the dollar king in the world. But this is all changing now. How much does the economic side of it all play into this now?
Well, America is still a very rich country, and therefore is very, very powerful. I mean, money and power are virtually synonymous in the world today. So the U.S. feels free to assert its power, and seems to be doing so ever more aggressively. That's especially with regard to certain areas like the Middle East or Latin America. And as to how long this can continue, I mean, I think the U.S. economy is—it's much shakier than people realize. There was the worst financial crisis in history in 2008, and the U.S. economy has not really recovered since then. Neither has a global capitalist economy. So how much longer this game can go on, I don't really know. I think things are much more tenuous than those in charge are let on. But I don't have a crystal ball. I don't know when it will end.
Well, Omali, go ahead. You want to say something? Go ahead.
If you understand that the political economy of the United States rests upon a foundation of slavery and colonialism, when you see the peoples around the world resisting, you see the crisis of the economic crisis being something that mirrors the political crisis that responds to people all around the world fighting to change their relationship to the United States and to Europe. When you see people in Afghanistan and people in Iraq and people in South America and people even in the ghettos of this country saying that we're going to change this relationship, when you see in the growing economy of China, even though it's not my favorite economy, when you see that happening, it's changing everything on the ground. You're right, the economic situation in the United States is extraordinarily tenuous, and I think for the entire capitalist system, it's extraordinarily tenuous, and it is a dollar that is backed up by the gun. It's not backed up by the gold, it's backed up by the gun. And there's an assumption that U.S. Military hegemony can continue to dominate the world, even though that's shaking. I think that's one of the reasons we see the desperate actions by Trump and other people like him, but certainly on the border. Look at what's happening throughout Europe, the so-called immigrant crisis. It's happening because colonized people are coming to Europe, seeking their resources, and the entire capitalist system is resting upon a very shaky foundation now of colonized people who are returning to try to take back their resources, their lives, and their own sovereignty from Europe and from the United States.
Well, Daniel, do you think that we're going to see, as a result of all of this, more and more people just coming to the realization that perhaps staying wherever they're coming from, with all of its difficulties, may be even less risky than trying to get into the U.S.? And at the end of the day, isn't this what Trump is trying to do?
Absolutely, yes. That is Trump's strategy. I mean, his strategy is to make things as miserable as possible in refugee camps in places like Clint, Texas, so that people will lose heart, they'll go back where they came from. But at the same time, the U.S. makes conditions in places like Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador, et cetera. The U.S. seems to be determined to undermine conditions there even more than they already are now. So people in those areas really are torn. They can't stay and they can't go.
Okay.
Their situation is impossible. The U.S. is making it more impossible.
Okay. Stay with me, Daniel. Let me give Omani 30 seconds because I'm out of time. Go ahead, Omani.
But yet somehow it keeps going on.
It can't stay under the conditions as they exist. And what Trump is doing is fostering revolution throughout South America. The people will rise up against corrupt and docile leaders who simply do what the United States want done, and then revolution will transform the economic relationship that America has to these countries as well. The people are going to be free. And that's the thing that Trump and all of his allies, both liberals and conservatives, are going to have to recognize. If they don't recognize it, the people will make it very clear in the upcoming future.
And so on that note, we're out of time. I appreciate both of you being with us. Chairman, African People's Socialist Party, Omali Yeshitela out of Florida, and journalist and author Daniel Lazar out of New York. And as always, viewers, we appreciate you being with us on another debate. I'm Marcia Hashimi, signing off for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran. Hope to see you next time.